Strange Times in New Boston, episode number 7, Reflections on the Virus. Welcome to Strange Times in New Boston, and welcome to this, the 7th episode of this podcast. Thank you for letting me be your guide as we explore these strange times. In this episode, I am going to reflect on the Wuhan coronavirus, aka COVID-19. If you have any comments or questions about the podcast, please send them to me at Strange Times in New Boston, all one word, at hushmail.com. What times have we lived to see? Is it strange enough for you now? Who would have predicted all of this 1 year ago? Events are moving fast, and who knows where we will be 1 year from now. So let's get to it. Story idea. I have this great idea for a science fiction story. A totalitarian foreign nation, call them Nation X, plots to take over the world through clever use of a biological weapon. Nation X releases a genetically engineered virus, based on an existing one, on one of their own states, and then uses their own citizens as a real-world virus incubator. They then allow and encourage their infected citizens to travel internationally, hence spreading the plague worldwide. Nation X isn't dumb, though, and uses its own Nazi-esque police force to stop citizens from spreading the virus internally. Nation X also utilizes corrupt international organizations to deceive the world from what is happening. Just to make sure things get really bad, Nation X corners the market in manufacturing personal protective equipment and buys up existing worldwide stocks of PPEs. Nation X uses the global catastrophe ensuing from all of this to further its nefarious geopolitical aims. The plot revolves around an honest scientist in Nation X who releases the virus before plans are full rot, thereby saving the world from a 1984-style global hegemony by the tyrannical and homicidal Nation X. We'll give Nation X a backstory as having been run by a series of nasty tyrants with a lamentable history of murdering their own citizens. I realize that sounds crazy, right? I mean, that could never actually happen, could it? Science fiction in my story is that the virus is genetically modified. All the rest of the elements could be pulled from the news headlines. Personally, my instinct is that the release of COVID-19 in Wuhan was accidental, unintended, or a feature of nature. It's easier for me to believe in a world of incompetence and poor control procedures than it is for me to attribute such malice to the lords of China. It will be interesting to see how the geopolitical picture changes in the wake of the changes wrought by the virus. We will see who profits. If not war, then what? I have to say that the question of, are we at war with China, has crossed my mind. If we aren't exactly in a state of war with China, then what we are in isn't exactly a state of peace either. It feels to be a state of less than peace, but something short of shooting each other. This also feels to be something modern, and something for which we do not yet have a name. China's actions are not those of a friendly power, nor even of a competitor, but those of an active adversary. I wonder how long we Americans must endure the seemingly endless cycle of cyber attacks and industrial espionage, coupled with mindless propaganda by the Chinese Communist Party. I think it is time for the multinational corporations based here but with feet in both camps to declare for sides. I believe in an open society, but not to the point of suicide. Are you with us? Or are you with the communists? Being thankful. I had hoped that a shared crisis like the virus might heal some of the wounds our country has undergone in recent years, but given the extraordinary tenor of the times, it appears that is not going to happen. The coming of the Wuhan coronavirus has not produced any kind of post-9/11 moment, which is too bad. Even if the coming of the virus hasn't produced a major political detente, you can't help but hear the smaller stories of kindness that have come out of our citizens and civic officials. Whether it's some public department and citizens parading past the house of a child on their birthday, or some other such activity, it's good to see that at least the New Hampshire community is not dead. If you find yourself in the midst of a major epidemiological event that doesn't turn out to be a stacking the bodies in the street kind of moment, then congratulations. This is one of the few times in your life when having some historical perspective will make you more optimistic and not less. I hope that everyone with a good command of the epidemiological history of the human species We'll take time to savor this moment. Ah, nice, isn't it? Most, if not all, novel virus outbreaks can literally involve stacking the bodies in the street. So when it turns out to be not that kind of event, I personally feel thankful, relieved, and maybe a little blessed. Not emotions I often feel on a national or even global scale. If you don't think that death didn't just pass us all by, maybe you should think again. This could have been when the shit hits the fan, and it could have been everywhere. This could have gone so bad that entire nations would dissolve in the wake of the virus. We might like to believe that our civilization and our lovely little republic will last forever, and that it can't happen here, but it can happen, and maybe it almost just did. As I pointed out in an earlier podcast, European immigrants were only able to colonize North America because of the destruction of its native populations by old world diseases. Disease is why humans in New Boston speak English and not Abenaki. Our entire world is just a balancing act that almost tipped over. I hope that everybody could find it in their hearts to be just a little nicer to everybody else after what was perhaps a very near brush with catastrophe. Reactions on the virus. Lest we not be appalled at other humans' actions during this pandemic, I hope you will join with me in condemning the more extreme viewpoints out there. I want to mention two viewpoints explicitly that I think need to be commented on. Watching the kid die. Hypothetically, let's say you are watching your child waste away from a disease and there is a cure, yet the law demands that you do nothing. Could you do that? Would you do that? Is it ever right to ask someone else to do that? Their child? Yet, isn't this the position that many small business owners occupy in our current society? Small business owners are forced to stand by and watch the organizations they have created, their economic children, that they have invested a great deal of time and energy into, slowly slide into insolvency. Washington is not going to bail them out because Washington can't. Bailing out all the small businesses would really bankrupt our already bankrupt federal government. Nothing and no one is going to save many of these businesses, and since they are the major employer in the United States, that is going to cause a great deal of social dislocation. It's sad, it's pointless, and it hurts all of us. What do people do when they are pressed into such straits? They complain. They complain publicly. They complain to the people they feel aggrieved by. They complain to their political leaders, and they organize with others of like mind. To pretend that the people placed into such straits by political leadership have no right or reason to peacefully assemble and protest the terrible consequences that they see coming for them and their families is to be as heartless and as cruel as the virus itself. If you don't recognize the financial holocaust that is burning down the financial resources of every small business in the United States right now, then you need to wake up and get some empathy or at least some economic common sense. I don't doubt that there will literally be lists of the companies that died from Wuhan coronavirus. Our society is predicated on the people's capital all right to peacefully assemble, particularly to petition the government for redress of grievance. Unless the state is going to put on its big boy pants and declare martial law and suspend civil authority, people who want to protest have a right to do it. The right to hazard our own persons in the expression of our political will shouldn't be a concept you need to explain to Americans. The right of the citizens to peacefully assemble and protest the actions of their government isn't there to protect the popular opinions. Nothing wrong. A survey of human history invariably leads one to notice the decrease in epidemic diseases in the 20th and 21st century. The last big epidemiological event was the 1918 influenza outbreak, called the Spanish flu, and it killed about 50 to 100 million humans. Not fun. Now that we are advanced enough to see more of the microscopic world that surrounds us, people have been predicting another big outbreak was coming on grounds of the longer it goes without occurring, the more likely it is that some kind of major event will occur. The best-selling book, The Hot Zone, which narrated the search for the cause of Ebola, was penned in 1994, more than 25 years ago. There's nothing new about hearing responsible scientists note the possibility that something like a 1918 event could occur at any time, and sooner or later, it probably would. When the Wuhan coronavirus first came on the scene in late 2019, nobody knew what would happen. True, it hasn't turned out to be 1918 all over again, but nobody knew that at the time it started. I have to wonder at the individuals who defied all recognized protocols regarding the handling of infectious agents and situations at the start of the then unknown and novel coronavirus. Did they not understand how bad this could be? Pandemics are nasty, ugly things. This wasn't a question of whether people don't have the right to defy the protocols for biohazards. It's more of a question about why would you defy the protocols for biohazards? The government didn't make up the rules for biology. I suppose there will always be contrarians who are going to do their own thing despite all counsel, and who in a more lethal epidemic might well perish for their contrariness. But even if I don't like the government telling me what to do, and I don't, that doesn't mean that everything the government tells me is a lie. Jonathan Haidt and the Righteous Mind. Trying to write a podcast on a dense 370-odd page non-narrative book probably was not a good idea. It's hard. It was harder than I thought, and in the end, the product I came up with wasn't worthy of release. I'm still new at podcasting, and I do have a life, and I could not wrap my head around how best to present this particularly important book. The Righteous Mind is a book about data. It's a book about interpreting the story of the data coming out of the social sciences. It isn't a comfortable book to read, but it is fascinating. Hands down, The Righteous Mind does the best job of explaining the current high level of political tension in our society that I've encountered. If you are someone who cares about communicating with people outside of your political tribe, then you should read this book. If I ever get the material into a format that works for me, maybe I will release it. Well, that's the end of the journey. Thank you for letting me narrate our shared travels through these strange times. The next episode is an active production and will cover race, Black Lives Matter, BLM, George Floyd, statues, cancel culture, and much, much more. If you have comments or questions about the show, send your comments to me at Strange Times in New Boston, all one world, at hushmail.com. Live free or die.